welcome to Critical Hit, a Major Spoilers Dungeons & Dragons podcast. Well, the crew is all back together, and they're pounding out some weapons and getting ready to do some cool things. So what better time for a mailbag?
Mailbag.
So many questions sent to podcast@majorspoilers.com. We figured it's time to get to answering these. We're going to try to get through, but we'll see how many we can get through. Hi, my name is Andrew. It's my first time DMing for a very small group. By very small, I mean practically my brother and my father. My father somehow knew I listened to your podcast, so for my 13th birthday, he got me a set of 4th edition books, just the basics, and a subscription to the D&D Insider. I have one question. I am new to D&D. Awesome. This is why, kids, you delete your cache in your history of where you've gone, because that's how your parents find out about, you know, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a critical hit.
Out of it.
You know? Right.
Let's see. I'm new to DMing, and I'm having trouble encouraging my group to RP without being extremely annoying. My father, the so-called D&D elder, by self-proclamation, has two characters to fill in some of the space, while my brother plays one and doesn't seem enthralled in the game. I've tried giving bonuses to attack rolls, skill checks, and even action points in a very amazing occasions, but they don't seem to RP unless I stress the issue.
Part of it is it's hard to RP with two players only.
Yeah.
It's very hard to RP when you're playing multiple characters as well.
That too. And you know, it's honestly a factor there is that sometimes it's hard to roleplay around people that you know in a non-roleplaying capacity. You know, it's when you are roleplaying a character, you're putting yourself out there. You're like creating this little guy and stuff, and like it's vulnerable. It's a moment where if somebody goes, "Oh no, that character is stupid," it really like emotionally hurts.
Yeah.
So it's possible that your dad and your brother just aren't putting themselves out there that way. I would say just keep coaxing them. Generate instances in which it'll be difficult for them to move forward without role-playing. Like if they walk up to a guy who's guarding a door, and it's pretty clear that they won't be able to necessarily take him down because he's got 10 other guys. And they're like, I talk to him and I like intimidate him. They're like, okay, what do you say?
How does that go?
Yeah, exactly. Tell me what you say. And then eventually they'll get tired of you being like, tell me what you say. Tell me what you say. And they'll just say it.
Yeah. Rodrigo is very good at creating situations where his NPCs, his characters, talk to us, thereby making it a natural response to talk back. And I don't necessarily recommend for lack of a better word, gimmick. But I can tell you that for me, it is very helpful as a player character to separate the expectation of an out-of-character comment that sounds like this and an in-character comment that kind of, I want to go like this. So you don't necessarily want to have that big crutch of, I have an accent, I have a funny voice, because granted, I admit that occasionally my funny voice even gets on my own nerves, but... It's a way to make sure that I'm in character. So if if your players have that, or if you have that in interacting with the players, that may help. And as the old guy in the room, one thing that you may run into is with old guys, not necessarily, I don't want to call your father an old guy, but with an expectation of a veteran player, that player may be set in his ways. He may have a style that has not ever had a heavy role play component.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that may not be changing anytime soon. But the veteran player, if you make sure that there is some sort of payoff for it, some sort of, even in character, you know, you don't necessarily want to make it a quid pro quo, but make it something that works for him and benefits the group.
The other thing is they're already familiar with the podcast. So find an episode that has what you consider to be some good role playing. And just, you know, completely, in a, you know, be slick about it. Don't be like, listen to this role playing and then do it. Like, just be like, oh, you should listen to this episode of Critical Hit because something funny happened. And then just get it into their heads that that's how you play things.
Torque and Ket and Dean Darkmist, I recommend.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Chris Brown says, I'm only on episode 40, but I'm enjoying the cast. There's one thing I've wondered since the first couple of episodes. I swear I recognize one of the voices and attitudes from my WoW days on Vent. Did or does Orym play Cain on the Elder Thalala server with his wife? I had a ton of fun playing with him. No. The answer is no.
Hmm.
I played on the, what is it, the Elven Ring or the Earthen Ring as a character named Rivendorn. Hi, guys. I love the show, says Jamie. It reminds me of my teenage years playing role-playing games.
Yeah, we're all teenagers.
Yeah,
we are.
My favorite moment was when Tork delivered Smith's eulogy. That speech is a running joke with my inner sanctum of buddies. I most peed my pants. I do have a question for you. Do you have any suggestions for trying to lure my old group into playing again? It's been many years, and many of us are married and have children now. Thanks in advance for your answer, and keep up the great work. Send out an email that says, we're getting the old gang back together.
Yeah, I was going to say, a montage works. put on a suit, go to one guy's house, be like, hey, I'm putting the gaming group back together. And then, you know, when, like, his wife comes out and she's like, you need to do the laundry. And he'll be like, I'm going to go play D&D with my friends. And then you go to another one and it's like a lady at a car dealership. And she's like, oh, guys, like, I need to sell a car. Otherwise, I'm not going to do it. And they're like, come on, you just roll some dice. And she's like, all right, I'll do it. And then she like gets in. And then there's like a musician guy and he's already there because he wasn't doing anything.
Right. And then you need to blackmail one guy in, so you know, you're like, sell me your children.
Right.
And then he loses
his
job.
You need a little one.
Yep.
How much for the women?
I don't know. I think telling stories is probably a good way to do it. If you guys have some fun stories from back in the day when you guys were playing, call them up and be like, hey, remember when that guy got caught in that spike trap, and then we tried to get him out, but then we all fell into the spike trap? Those were good times.
So a flashback sequence instead of
a montage. And if they're That's married with kids, just call them up and say, hey, remember how we used to have fun? Let's do that again.
As an old married guy, I would say that your primary concern is always going to be scheduling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, while you're doing this, you might just kind of throw out there, hey, you know what? What would be a good time that you might be available if we were even consider this?
Right.
Because, you know, to be frank, if you get to the point where nobody's available at the same time, you're probably going to have a point where the band falls apart and then you have to make a sequel with Jim Belushi.
Yeah.
Hi, guys, says Trevor. I need your help. I'm a relatively new Trevor. Dungeon master, having only run a couple of campaigns, but a variety of other bizarre circumstances have led to me. I've been asked to run the campaign for a bunch of presumably new players at the local library. I'm excited to do this, but this is the first game I've ever run for people I don't know personally. Also, I'm not sure how to promote the game in flyer form. Have you got any tips for describing the game to new people and ways to start a campaign with a bunch of people who probably never met before? Should I keep the setting vanilla because they're all new, or should I start them with something weird and critical hitty? The game starts in September. Ooh, a little late for this.
Sorry about that, pal.
Sorry, man. So if you could help me out before then, that would be super awesome.
I've already failed at our first task. So we're just going to skip the question altogether and just call the whole thing a loss. Now.
You can respond.
If you've been asked to do this for the library, presumably they have a group already, wouldn't
they? Well, it depends. They may just be saying, hey, here's our game day. Can you get people interested in this? And again, I'm just putting hypotheticals in there, but maybe you could, hey, Johnny, maybe you can get some kids interested in this and run a game for them.
Yeah.
Here's our back room that is no longer filled with books.
Addressing the campaign and what you should run, I would actually consider one-shots and small or very small, like two-session arcs, just so that you don't launch into a story and then, you know, one person is like, oh, I don't want to play this, even though game one, you told me that I was the chosenest one. So yeah, bye. Right. Yeah, so this way it allows you a little bit more leeway as far as
poster design. How about this? Ever wanted to save the kingdom? Ever wanted to be the hero? Ever wanted to get away from your 9-to-5 and explore the worlds beyond? Come Saturday, library, 5 p.m.
Yeah.
There you go.
Read a book.
Butterfly in the sky.
This is it's going to be pretty much the page master.
Hello, I'm only halfway through the entire run of the Critical Hit podcast, but I've loved every minute of it. Loving every minute of it, says Eric.
Smith. Hey, this
Smith,
is
Smith. 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 He's the best character. I hope he stays around forever.
Let me see if he says that. Oh no, he doesn't say that. We'll see what he says about who is the best at the end of his letter and at the end of his question.
Smithy.
But this is what I like to hear. I was introduced to the podcast by a friend.
Yay.
That's what you guys are doing. This is awesome. Eric says it was probably the catalyst for a D&D rival in my town and among my friends. We are playing a weekly campaign and everything is going great. And I think all of the fun we're having is due to the great part to all of you. I have two questions. Do you feel that 4E combat has changed the flow of dungeon crawling? I played a little 2E years ago, and I remember dungeons being tense, going room by room, exploring where monsters and traps could jump out at any moment. However, in 4E, everything is so encounter-based, it seems like I'm going from battle to battle with cutscenes in between. That's question one.
I think that 4th edition has changed the flow of things, and they've done that on purpose. They've gone to a more scene-based thing where you are looking at it's a little bit more cinematic. It's like you're either in a fight or you are running away from a boulder, you know, and you don't spend a lot of time like recuperating from having run away from the boulder. You're just like, okay, everybody spends healing surges. Okay, here's the next scene. So yes, I think they did do that, and I think that was on purpose.
Matthew, what about you?
I think that it's definitely there, but there are multiple things to take into account. One, even in AD&D, no two dungeon crawls were alike.
True.
And I remember playing a game of Scary, Scary Ravenloft. Ooh, that was supposed to be scary, scary, and it turned ridiculous because of what happened. And just stop nodding your head like it was my fault, Rodrigo.
No, I wasn't saying that. I'm saying that I've never played or heard of a game of Ravenloft that's actually scary.
Yeah.
And like, that's, it's Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, because, I mean, if your guy can shoot fireballs from his face, vampires really aren't that scary.
But I think it's also a question of your expectations. If your game master is thinking you want, you know, level up, grind, it may be something where he's trying to give you what he thinks you want, and it's not necessarily the tense. Something else that is problematic is you don't remember the points where you're going along and it's tense and it's like something ridiculous like a freaking carrion crawler. So, you know, there are points even in the old school where it was just like, oh, that was happened, and then you kind of move on. So
yeah.
you get that feeling of, oh.
I do like what 4th edition has done in that sense. It's still available. If your 4th edition experience is critical hit, I never use traps at all. You know, the only traps that I use are in skill challenges, but traps are written into the game. You can play 4th edition in a thing where you just draw out a giant dungeon and people move in turn order through it and, like, hobgoblins come out and kill them.
Bah.
Or, like, they trip on traps and stuff like that. I don't run it that way. Right. Because I think that the game has put in a few things that allow me to not run it that way. And I'm very thankful for them because I prefer that narrative thing that skill challenges give you.
When I first started playing my character, this is the second part of his question, I tried to play him naturally. That is, I had him act as a normal person would, at least a normal person in a fantasy setting. Mm-hmm. However, this led to a very flat feel as most people aren't interesting 24/7. After a few sessions, I randomly gave him a southern drawl and started spouting catchphrases and being quirky. This was a lot of fun and made everyone laugh and really get into my character and theirs. However, I feel like I turned my character into a caricature, not a real person. Mm-hmm. I suppose I can try layering more quirks and having responding to things in surprising ways, but it just struck me that basically playing a cartoon instead of what I thought of as more natural, realistic person, both more fun and more appealing to others. What are your thoughts on these differences in role-playing?
What a fantastic example.
Well, yeah, but I guess when you look at any character, mm-hmm. whether it be on television, a comedy series, a movie, a podcast, or whatever, all those actors are playing caricatures, right? I mean, how many times do you see the dopey husband and the shrewy wife and the adorable
wacky neighbor.
We saw one in the last question where I did a montage.
Yeah.
Very yeah. True. So I don't have a problem if you're playing a caricature or a stereotypical type character, providing that it is what your character is, right?
Here's
Matthew,
the thing.
Let's let Matthew jump in, because he was going to...
As someone who has run into this problem with this character in this game, I'll tell you what I've discovered. There are points where Torque surprises me. And by that I don't mean that, you know, there's a separate voice in my head going, burn things! But there are points...
because
in
that's
the
one that's, when I'm playing Orym, that's exactly what's going through my head.
I know,
head.
Yeah.
Kill your friends. Yeah,
but that's also when you're playing Steven.
But wait, he's also an over-the-top caricature as well.
Yeah.
When you get into it and you're playing, you know, there's a moment, and I think the moment that really crystallized Torque for me was jump out the window. And that's maybe in my second appearance on the show. Mm-hmm. But I also found that it gets to a point where it feels like I'm playing a goon. And I don't necessarily see Torque as a goon. So there are moments where, and you have to pick your battles, obviously. And in a game like this, especially this game, which is, you know, a real-time player thing, you pick your moments where that character has hidden depths, or that character, it maybe your character found that he needed to emphasize something about himself. Maybe he took on this aspect and this persona to keep his compatriots, you know, from being angry. Something to where the reality of the person comes through, because every person, real person who's not just a character, even, you know, even the gooniest goon you've ever met is the hero of his own story. So even if those, you know, those depths, those moments never actually come out in the role play, I feel like it helps knowing things that I know about Torque that have never come up. And now Adriana's here and she asks these questions and I'm like, damn it, now I have to answer the question.
Yeah.
We love you, honey.
What are you going to say, Roderick?
What color are his eyes?
They're black,
damn
it.
Insane, insane, insane questions, yes. Dork. this listener is walking down an interesting path, because this doesn't just apply to role-playing games. This applies to writing.
Right.
You know, and writing characters. It goes like that. It's like, this character's bland. I'm going to give him a weird accent and a weird affectation. Oh, now this character's interesting, but he's just a caricature. He's just a shell that has this other stuff going on.
But, you know, when you do add those caricature elements in, you do have to think about them. So your character that has a southern drawl.
You don't have to think about
them.
But if you do...
If you're making him believable.
Yeah, if you do, then you start fleshing out the character. And that... Right. Is what this caller or this listener wants to get into.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they're almost there. They're like, I gave my character this and it made him more interesting. Should I give him a weird hat too?
Yeah.
No, you shouldn't. Yeah. You should explore the stuff that you've given him.
Right.
Why does he have that accent? Why does he have those
expressions? Well, that's what I'm saying. Sid Field, I think it's Sid Field, in many of his books on script writing and developing characters, goes into the development of a backstory for your character. And so when you talk about a character who has a southern drawl, did he grow up in the southern lands of this fantasy realm?
Right.
If he didn't, the southern drawl is maybe not appropriate for that character, right?
But so what does that actually mean?
Right,
Torque
right.
has elements of what I'd consider to be a Texas accent. There is no Texas in this world. So why does Torque talk the way he does? I know you don't. Eventually someone will ask. But go ahead.
Well, being from a rural area, like as soon as you get out of a city, people kind of like drift into this southern accent, no matter what part of the country you are. So just keep that in mind. It's just kind of a rural accent.
Well, but he specifically says southern drawl as opposed to a drawl.
Right.
Right.
Well,
but I don't think that is there a problem with creating a character that is a caricature or a cartoonish character. I mean, if you're just playing
that, that depends on what you want out of the character. Yeah, you have to remember that this guy has to role play this character.
Yeah.
And there are times I have met a lot of players who are frustrated with the way that their characters get treated in game.
Right.
Because, and a lot of the time, it's because they portray their characters as caricatures.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, here's my character. I'm crazy. I'm a crazy wizard. And then people like, will have to, like, the group has to make a big decision, and they just leave this character out. Mm-hmm, and he's like, why'd you guys leave me out of the decision? It's like, because your guy's crazy.
Yeah,
he's literally crazy. Like, he would just not shut up during the decision-making process, so we left him out. I mean, that happens, and you have to be careful about that. So I would say definitely think about, you know, once you've added these things, going back and fleshing them out, and next character you make, start there. Mm-hmm. Start with a backstory. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Start with what is going to make this character interesting. Mm-hmm. And then I guarantee when you walk in with a character that has at least a partially fleshed out backstory, it's going to be so much easier. Everybody's going to take notice of that, because anything that happens, you're going to be able to make this decision kind of with this operating system in front of you.
So if you were wanting to look for the screenwriting book, Syd Field, S-Y-D, Field is his name, scriptwriting guru, he's got a couple of things in there. So the big moment everyone's been waiting for from Eric. Thanks again for everything you all do. Rodrigo's the best. Moving on to... to Brandon. I have recently started DMing for a group of my close friends who have never played before. They all played 3.5 before, so I decided to continue with that after hearing the podcast with 4th edition. I'm thinking it would be easier to learn for the new players, but I'm not going to flip systems in the middle of a campaign. Mm-hmm. I have heard you mention 3.5 was a broken system. Could you please briefly elaborate?
3.5 is a broken system, but if you pick and choose what your characters, what your players have access to, you can make it work without any problems. If you're just like, we're just doing the PHP, a couple other books, go online, find out what the broken feats are, rule, say that they can't do that, you should be fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for the most part, I mean, the main issue comes in with wizards and the weird abilities they get later on.
Mm-hmm.
If you keep it to a certain level span, you have, I forget what it is exactly.
If you keep it below 12th level, certainly, like if you just play like from level 1 through 12th, you should be fine.
Yeah, that gives you a pretty good area where most of the classes are pretty well balanced against each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was thinking of doing, and he goes on to say, I was thinking of doing 3D encounters, and I believe you've addressed this before, but I had a good idea. I was thinking of buying some 1-inch clear acrylic cubes and use these to place top miniatures and use these with a standard vinyl battle map. I was wondering what you guys think of doing 3D battles in this way. And I'm guessing that's for aerial up and down?
Yeah, that's, that's what he means by that.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, it does. And I know that, like... what's the HeroClix game? You know, you have characters that fly and have the ability to fly, and what it does is they come with a little base that you just set the character on top of. And the HeroClix have a little bit bigger base than the D&D miniatures or the Pathfinder miniatures, but I think that they would still maybe sit on those kinds of things too. So you might want to look for those if you're wanting to do height things, and I think they have on those there's a little click system so you can go up higher and down lower on that. Rob?
As far as the HeroClix thing, that's...
Well, just in 3D gaming, 3D encounters.
It's a pain.
It is.
It's mostly not worth it. The biggest problem is every idea you have is going to run into the problem, going to run into multitudes of problems. Mm-hmm. Every single idea, like the only one I've thought of that's not going to run into the same problems that all the even with the HeroClix thing, okay, what happens if someone's underneath him?
Right.
Can't do that. The cube thing might work if it's like little
high enough to put
tables.
Yeah.
But then you have to have miniatures. Basically, you're just using pogs instead of the minis, which that could actually work if you've got
But then you have to be able to see them anyway.
If
you're using them just to be like, this is a building, that'll probably work out better. There are going to be a lot of things that you have to consider. How tall is this building? How many dice of damage do people take? Like, is this like a pit? And if somebody falls into the pit, are they just completely out of the fight?
Yeah.
You know, like these are all considerations that you have to have when you go into a 3D combat.
Absolutely. Just in general, when it comes to a game with a tactical element where you're using miniatures and battle mats or whatever, I prefer to have a pretty wide level of abstraction where, you know, squares for any area of effects are fine with me. You know, just flying basically being a movement mode and not have it where characters can share squares.
Right.
That's all fine.
I do have house rules for flying. We just haven't seen them
yet. Adriana, what about you? Have you done any encounters with some of your other friends where you've gotten into a 3D encounter?
No, but it does appeal to my, like, dollhouse sensibility.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a lot of paper craft stuff, if you go out there and look, that are specifically designed for, you know, what's the 40K mech battle
Warhammer.
Stuff?
Warhammer 40K.
Warhammer 40K and D&D, where it's basically you print it out on heavy cardstock, cut it out, fold it up, boom, there's your building, and you can build these things out and put all your miniatures all across the buildings and those kinds of things. And I find it very appealing, kind of like you, Adriana.
But I have to say, like just setting up like a normal game that doesn't have like any 3D building whatsoever is like time consuming. So remember, like, if you're gonna do it, remember to like to take that into consideration. Also remember that your players will probably be like, okay, done with this town.
Yeah.
You mean the town that I spent 5 hours building?
That's important. If you have it in your head that you want to do this, and that's cool. If you want to do this, then by all means do it. Then you also need to run a game that can accommodate this. Either make your pieces
crawl.
Yeah. Either make your pieces something that can be interchangeable, or, you know, make it so that the point of the game is for the party to like defend a fort, so you're actually always fighting in the same place, or something like that. Or, you know, a dungeon crawl where you can just kind of move structures around and be like, okay, this cave has like the tower thing over here, and this is a lake, and then this is this other thing.
Here's one from John that's just kind of I'll just read it. I finally got around to doing a recurring donation for you guys. Hopefully it'll fuel a few more pods of casting. That's great. Thank you, John. If you guys want to find out more about becoming a recurring subscriber, a VIP, so to speak, and get a little bit back for all that you're doing for us, head over to members.majorspoilers.com. John goes on to say, your podcast is a real joy to listen to, despite my dislike for 4E, which is a warning, as I can see role-playing is still acceptable in D&D. Rodrigo has a very illustrative means of DMing, and it brings the best out of you guys. I was hungry for a D&D podcast, and 5 years after discarding a couple of others, I've been digesting them at the rate of 3 or so per day, and now up to 156, and the Adventurers in the Fey Wild with Trell, who will hopefully be a permanent installation into the group, or at least Adriana in one form or another. Want to hear something amazing? I like Orym the best, by far!
Wow.
You need a more vocal fan base, Orym. You're a deep fella, like a cross between Frasier and the Grinch, and listening to you evolve past your general elitism into a working friendship with this pack of freaks and Torque is riveting drama. It's the pure childishness Orym pops up with, and the utter brash cockiness he spouts it with gems everyone. Adriana, thank you for joining my my game, which I will refer to later, has a female player since I've been in it. It's all about the group, not about the society of gamers. I have some art people I get into round and round and rounds of about the burgeoning female population at cons and how hopefully more female characters will evolve into mainstream comics who aren't a set of breasts and some laser beams or whatnot. I tend to mirror Matthew a lot when he opines in the male section, and it sounds like we're on the similar ground game and RPG-wise. Now, you may find this funny, too. I've been playing in a 2E campaign world, DM extensive homebrew, for 20 years this year, and one character for 18 years. Been playing one character for 18 years.
You get that.
Wow.
Problematically, in a low magic, low XP game world with bi-monthly meetings, my poor cleric has only made it to level 10. Wow.
Wow.
I'm sure the story's riveting.
The upshot is that the DM has been pretty egalitarian with the levels across the board, which makes us on the short list of powerful people on the planet. So I thought I'd read that. That was nice. Thank you for sending that in, John. Hello, everyone, especially Torque. I want to first say that Critical Hit has been a godsend to me while I've been out on deployment these past 6 months. I serve on the USS Dwight D. Eisenhower. Thank you for doing that. And I'm on my way back home after spending many months in the Middle East. Critical Hit has been my nerd-filled escape for these past months, so I have to first thank you for making content and making the show just that, a show, something to listen and to enjoy. I have a question for you all, which brings me to my point. Knowing that I'm only on episode 200-ish, my question is this. Sometime the gang seems to pull away from overall pressing matters, for example, the gang has recently landed in a force with some tribal elves while on the way to someone's rather pressing family issues. How is it as a DM that you almost effortlessly redirect the party members to do things that you may or may not want them to do when time seems to be of the essence? Do you plan to force them to do it anyway? Or just hope that they have ADD? On a side note, I think Trell would win in an ADD contest. No offense. Torque is the best.
Yay, Torque!
So thank you, Joshua, and thank you for serving on the USS Dwight D. Eisenhower.
Yep.
We'll take the tenuous Kansas connection.
Sure. Sure we will. DM?
How to effortlessly move your players in the direction you want them to. There's no such thing. It takes a ton of effort. Sometimes you point at something and say, look there! And they do it. Sometimes you point at something and say, look there, and they move in the opposite direction. I guess the interesting thing to me is that, and I may have misheard your email, but it seems to me that you feel that certain things were happening and that I didn't want them to happen. But I think some of the things you mentioned were things that I specifically wanted to happen and to specifically trip up the party on the way to their main goal.
Sure, sure, sure.
Like, my job is not to get the party from point A to point B. My job is actually to try and prevent the party from getting from point A to point B to a certain degree.
And surprisingly, we end up at point C way too many times.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You have to
triangulate. But I think that, I don't know if it's so much you directing a lot of times as each character is like, hey, my parents are in jeopardy. Hey, we got to go take care of my family back in the the woods. Orm's general, hey, we need to go get going with all this stuff. I think kind of helps move things along without getting bogged down into a lot of crazy town.
I don't know if everybody notices it. But Rodrigo does clearly and overtly manipulate us. And the most recent example, I think, was at one point we were like, well, we have a little bit of time and we need to do this, this, and this. And then somebody had a conversation with an NPC and everybody went, holy crap, we need to... Oh! We all ran around like the world was on fire because an NPC said, hey, maybe this is important. You guys remember this, and I don't even remember who had the conversation with the NPC. I just remember a Chinese fire drill that came afterwards of Rodrigo just kind of poking us and going, you guys have to do five things. Which one's more important? Neener pants, Sophie's choice. Ah! You know, that Rodrigo thing that he does in the back of his mind.
Ben from Melbourne asks, now we're all, he's talking about the friends that he plays with. My friends all have time commitments and lives to suit. Our availability to get together for the immature pleasure of gaming is extremely limited. We've tried to play remotely a couple of times, but it's been difficult. You guys seem to have this down pat. I know you've answered these questions before, but are you able to be more technically descriptive, including some pics on the site for exactly how you set up and operate? Does everyone have their own mics, or is it really as difficult as we found out, and Matthew and Adriana just suffer through it?
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of both. In fact, if you are a member, VIP member, I did a really quick video behind the scenes that showed off the gear that we use.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
So it's over on the member site. We probably won't ever put that up on the main site, though.
And I can tell you that there are some serious dangers to being a remote player. Because I am sitting here with my laptop, and my Torque character sheet is open on my laptop. And if I press that little slash to minimize it, I have access to Twitter and YouTube and all of my Comixology accounts and anything that could possibly distract me. And Rodrigo may not even notice that I'm distracted because I'm 250 miles away. So, I mean, there are times when I have to police myself and say, no, don't open the Twitter.
Well, that and the fact we can't see you because you won't turn on your camera. So Rodrigo can't monitor you that way. Whereas we get to look at the lovely Adriana all the time.
She is lovely.
Thank you.
I am a troll.
But I don't have any problem doing this remotely. I'm fine with this situation. I don't feel like I'm fighting the technology all the time or anything. Good. I like Google Plus a lot better than Skype.
Oh, yeah, I like Google Plus a lot better than Skype as well. Mm. This is so much better.
Sorry, man.
Don't know how much better this is.
I keep up with all the way better.
All the way better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Whatever. Jason writes in and says, "Dear future people, I'm writing this on June 23rd, 2013. I'm on episode 113, so there's a great chance that by the time you read this, I'll be caught up. You guys have helped me so much during some hard times. My question is for Rob, if he's still in the group." "An unfortunate reality is that gaming groups are always changing, and I'm not caught up to see who's there. Anyways, how can I go about setting up a Cat G faction in my college at the University of Southern Mississippi? I'm going to have to leave to school again soon and would love to set up a group of people dedicated to the experience of gaming and the camaraderie. Best wishes to all that you do. Keep rocking. Also, Matthew, I know more about Zeppelin than you do. Tongue sticking out. Emoticon. Jason from the University of Southern Mississippi School of Music."
Keep thinking that, sir.
I was going to say.
Yeah, the first thing you need to do is look at your school's rules about setting up a group,
setting up
an organization. We've the National Cat G has kind of waned in the last couple of years. One of the presidents that was doing really, really good stuff with it had to go on to other things in life, and then the next couple of people didn't keep up with things. So we're trying to get that back up and running, but as of right now, it's kind of non-existent. You can send an email to the account there, and we'll try and get a hold of you, but I can't really promise anything. It's at catg.org.
Yeah, probably best thing, just go ahead and form a local gaming group if you can within your academic organizations, and then see about possibly becoming part of this network from there.
Jessica in Tennessee says, "I'm slowly making my way through the critical hit episodes. And though I don't play D&T myself or have anyone close to play with, I'm still finding the Dungeon Mastering workshops interesting and a fun look behind the scenes of how a game is created. I'm wondering, though, where I can find Rodrigo's articles that often get mentioned, such as the one about problem players. Are they listed in their own individual threads in the role-playing forum, or just right up as a response to other people's questions?" Yeah, they are collected. They're collected over at a site called majorspoilers.com. And if you go under the podcast critical hit category, you'll find all of those.
The articles are going to be under Gamer's Corner.
Yeah, there's another one, Gamer's Corner, too, that you can look at. But they're also cross-listed under critical hit.
Mm-mm.
No, they're not?
No, they're
okay.
Not.
Okay.
They should be.
They should be.
But that's where they're not critical hit articles.
Yeah, they're not always our critical hit articles. But if you
they're
just
all,
look
they're
at...
All, they're actually all under gaming. But also lots of news are under gaming.
Yeah, yeah.
So... yeah, if you want my articles about gaming, go to Gamer's Corner. Mm-hmm. If you want to read some of the like in between stuff that
like
I've written up for Critical Hit, then go to the Critical Hit podcast and just scroll down until you see like a weird banner that's not at all a red dye.
Also, quick navigation tip is if you can find a Rodrigo article, click on Rodrigo's name,
actually,
and that will list all articles written by Rodrigo.
You can just go to the About tab and click on Rodrigo there, and click on all the Rodrigo articles as well.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, that may
be a one-stop shop for all Rodrigo articles.
Yeah.
Except of course
his blogs.
Except of course for the ones where the robot overlord takes credit.
Yes, and he does that sometimes because he's a.
Adriana says, "Google for Gamer's Corner in quotation marks, and then Google for Rodrigo in quotation marks next to it."
Rodrigo's page, your individual page does pop up a lot more, you know, when you look at the rankings of all the pages. Yours, oddly,
I have a very expansive family.
Yep. There's that too.
They're all and they don't know how to use the internet, so they're just like Rodrigo Ajolote, and then like that picture just pops up.
Also, is it possible to post anonymously on the forums, or do I need to create an account? Unfortunately, because of all the spam bots and all that stuff, you really have to create an account. We just don't allow anonymous forum postings over there. And also, it's if there ever was an issue, you know, trolls, I mean, there's so many things going on online. And you're female, so this may not necessarily apply to you, except in the reverse, where anonymous trolls are berating and badgering and just really doing mean things to girl gamers. And, I mean, there's just been some terrible things that have been on the news recently. By recently, we mean
6 months ago.
6 months ago when you're listening to this. But I just don't... I just... Personally, I want that chain so that if something were to happen, there's an IP address that we can say, okay, this
Well, the forum moderators have access to the IP address. Other people aren't going to see it. So you can go to the forums, come up with an innocuous name, make sure that you're not
Jessica from Tennessee.
Right. Make sure that you hide all your information as you're signing in, and you should be okay. I mean, you won't be completely anonymous, but only the forum moderators will have access to your IP address. And honestly, the forum moderators are us, like me, basically.
Yeah.
And Steven.
Hey. I'm right here, Ray.
Jackie writes in and says, I'm a dedicated fan. I want to thank you all for creating such an awesome program. Your creativity and your characters and your story progress is inspiring, and I really admire how Steven and Rodrigo have turned this experiment/hobby into professional-level entertainment. I've donated to the site and will continue listening and cheering the gang on. Needless to say, I love the characters and plot, but what always gets me laughing is the kill your friends sword. I vote for that to be the theme of the next chapter. Like I said, I'm a newbie. And I understand how to play, and I consider myself fairly creative, but I've never been much of an actor, and I have a hard time coming up with things on the fly. So finally, my question, and again, I apologize if you've answered this before, how do you improve your improv? And I don't mean saying pithy one-liners. It may be my shyness, but I just can't act out my character during the session. After the game, though, I can think of all sorts of great responses that would have been in character. I think we've all been there.
Sure,
Matthew. Oh, yeah,
I should have said this.
I don't know. I mean, I did, and Matthew may have, and I'm pretty sure you've said you've done it before. Impromptu duet acting in high school. Did you do that? IDAs?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
For competition?
I mean, I did a lot of improv in high school, but nobody told me to.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, they told me.
Well, it's impromptu, that's why it's...
Yeah, yeah.
Those are great. I mean, if you don't know what IDAs are, did you guys do that in school?
My school wouldn't let us do IDAs in forensics.
Why not?
It was a... I have no clue.
IDAs.
Our coaches said no.
Satan's Theater.
Probably. Because it is considered to be a lesser form of the thing, and many people don't believe it to actually be edumacational.
Say again what IDA is.
So impromptu duet acting, the way it is just a team of two. So Matthew and I, our team would go up against all these other teams from schools, and so we would go in, and 15 minutes before we're supposed to perform, we reach into a basket, and we draw out a slip of paper that has a topic on it. And we have to put together a 5 to 8 minute skit based on that topic, and it cannot be any shorter than 5 minutes, and it cannot be any longer than 8 minutes. And then based
and
on
it should not be stolen from Cheech and Chong,
right? And based on how creative you are, how you tell your story, how you use the topic and the theme, and whether you're able to tell a story from beginning, middle, and end in that time is how they score you. And it's really a lot of fun. I loved it a lot.
I would say that the best way to improve your acting is to do it, to force yourself to do it. I mean, we all have – the French actually have a term, l'esprit d'escalier, the wit of the staircase, which is remembering something that would have been perfect as you're walking up the stairs home. And I will tell you, you know, from experience, I'm a very old man and I've done a lot of this kind of thing every episode. The next morning, I'll be sitting at work, half awake. Somebody will be like, in my ear, and I'll be like, Torque should have said this. Damn it, Torque should have said that.
I think we all go and through then, that. I mean, know, Orms, I do the same thing with Orms. Like, this is the way it should have come out when I said this, and it really came out wrong. But
so there's two things, and they're kind of similar. One, make sure that you have your characters, like, backstory and, like, the themes of your character fleshed out, because that makes it a lot easier. If you can make decisions as your character, then when suddenly things come up, you can react as your character a lot easier. That's one. And the other one is you can practice. You can, when you're alone, you can play your character to the mirror and see what you like and see what you don't like. I mean, honestly, like, I actually literally workshopped Stagsy's accent because I didn't want it to be exactly like a real world accent.
That Russian accent?
Yeah, that Lithuanian accent.
I believe it's Jamaican from Russia.
That Boston accent?
Yes.
Boston.
I got some iron for you.
Joe
my
says...
My ward is very, very nimble.
I love this one, too. Joe says, I'm a big fan of Critical Hit. I'm always impressed at how Rodrigo manages to weave the story so the players foreshadow him. Orm's sister, the lizard wizard, Dork's dog, etc. My question for anyone is how to handle foreshadowing things yourself as a DM. Do you drop hints or hooks with a particular resolution in mind and make it work? Or do you invent multiple potential resolutions in case the campaign goes in a different direction? In Critical Hit, an example of this would be Randus's second shadow. Thanks for the hours and entertainment. I plan to go through your link on all my future Amazon purchases. P.S. Trell rules.
Nice.
Yay.
Awesome.
I can tell you an embarrassing story that I think is relevant to this discussion.
About foreshadowing or duo shadowing in the case
or
of
ruling?
Foreshadowing.
I like what you did cool. there. About foreshadowing. Would you like to know when I realized that the dog was actually something that Torque asked for?
When he said it?
When Rodrigo
do you remember
told you.
The, do you remember the episode when the dog died? It was an embarrassingly long time. And I think that it was one of those things where I had said it as a joke. Mm-hmm. And Rodrigo, being an extremely skilled, not just game master, but improvisory actor. Improvisory, is that a word?
Sure.
Took that bit. Yeah, that bit of, can I have a puppy? And he used that, and he made that something, but I didn't know it at first. And that's how good he is. He did not call attention to it until he called attention to it. So I think that the trick is to listen closely and feel free to, you know, torture your players with things that they may have asked for that they didn't know they actually asked for.
I think... The good thing about role-playing games is that you can have a lot of things happen, and it's very difficult for every player to keep track of everything. That's both a good thing and a bad thing. There are things that are kind of one-off things that I've wanted to develop later that don't pan out at all. And most people don't remember them because they didn't pan out at all. So there's sometimes... Like, people will be like, oh, this thing is this thing, and that was set up by this thing. Brilliant! But they're not seeing all of, like, the complete, like, flop. Like, not loose ends, because they were, like, very minor things anyway. Mm-hmm. But they're not seeing all the things that didn't pan out at all.
Right.
All the theories I email you.
Yes. Yeah. Except for Adriana, who pays attention to everything. And she's like, so that bread that they ate... Thematically speaking, does that have anything to do with that one lunar god that you mentioned once, whose letters, when you put them together, is weird bread as an anagram, but also NTK, which I think stands for... Yeah, like that's what an email is like.
I so want to see all of these.
Yes. Someday we'll release them.
Yeah, when she goes crazy.
Yeah.
Starts shooting up.
Someday when we're served with a subpoena, we'll release them all.
Okay, so I've got a whole string of emails here that say, hey guys, ever thought of having some of your listeners join in on the show, even for the off season? Hey guys, can you teach me how to play in one of your online games? Hey guys, can I be part of your Critical Hit team? There's like four or five of them in a row that way.
The answer to that is they only had one slot and I took it.
That's kind of true.
That was kind of evil.
That is kind of true.
So, yes, for those of you who want to join Critical Hit, meet me at the Left Audio Channel. Hello.
I'm not going to pan this over the Left Audio Channel.
It's okay. They can still hear it in the Left Audio Channel. It's just anybody who doesn't.
Take out your right earbud.
Yeah, take out your right earbud. There you go.
You should have said right, so that way Rob couldn't hear it.
Oh, nice.
You actually lean to the left, Rodrigo. That's perfect.
Yeah, I like that.
So Critical Hit right now has all the players we want. Each one of the players at the table and or desks far away was picked out because I thought that they were going to be a good fit for the show and or own all the equipment.
but he did say and.
Yes. And or anything. Why split
hairs? Six of one, half a dozen.
So no, we are not currently looking for new players. If we were, I would probably go out and pick out somebody that I already knew and that I had played with before and all this stuff. So it is unlikely that an email request is going to get you into Critical Hit. It is also unlikely that you'll get into Critical Hit at all. I guess it could happen, but don't hold your breath.
But if you attend some of the fan events that we attend, like Nerdtacular, it's not uncommon for some of the fans to sit down and play games with us,
right,
including Dungeons and Dragons. So right, a couple of years ago, Rob sat down with a couple of our fans and played a game. We've played a lot of other games with people.
Mm-hmm.
If you listen to our Munchkin Land podcast, we played a lot of Munchkin with people at the most recent Nerdtacular. So if you see that we're going to be at fan events as a group or representing Critical Hit or Major Spoilers specifically, that is where you would want to hook up for these one-shot type events.
Furthermore, if what you want to do is talk to us and like talk to us about gaming and hang out, there are other avenues for that. Obviously, you can reach any of us through our various Twitter accounts. You can always send an email to podcast@majorspoilers.com. And potentially, we're looking into having our VIP members interact with us.
And actually, by the time you hear this, we've probably already done at least three of those.
Let's hope.
Yes. So all of our gold members will be able to get in and interact with us. Member. We do live streams, and one of us or multiples of us are there that you can chat with through the real-time chat, and we can respond back to you. So you can go check that out again, members.majorspoilers.com.
Multiples of us as in, like, one Brian or three Brians?
Well, we never want to have three Robs, so...
Right.
Just because it would be uneven.
Yeah. And
you always have multiple Matthews.
And we may have some instances where we're able to do Google Hangouts in the future, but right now we just can't do anything where we invite, you know, 200 people in, because Google Hangouts just doesn't work that way, unfortunately. So,
by the way, multiple Matthew is my favorite Invincible character.
There you go. Oh, here's one of my favorites. I'm not sure if this gets explained somewhere in later episodes, but I think there may be some recording time missing between episodes 120 and 121 of Critical Hit.
Oh, yes.
There's a new character
email?
Called Grin. And I believe Rob is playing, and there's an elven archer who I think is an NPC. Am I missing something somewhere? I don't mean to make fun, but I love these when people are just like, wait a minute, something's wrong.
Yes. I mean, at Nerdtacular, I was like approached, and they were like, okay,
so
explain what happened.
No, explain it.
But the thing is, and this particular person,
right,
I'm sure this person has listened three or four more episodes more and it's like, oh,
right, right. I don't know.
Okay, I see now.
The explanation you gave at Nerdtacular has been the most understandable.
So, yeah, yeah, because that's
so
what happened.
It. So share it.
Oh, okay. So here's the deal with...
And this is, we're only answering this one time, so
we'll
mark this on your...
Yes,
episode 220.
Right.
100 episodes after the fact.
Yes. I've actually explained it before on the show, but
yes,
here it is again. The idea is that Penelope's chronometer makes it so that each person's individual timeline doesn't necessarily synchronize with everybody else's. So each person experiences time individually unless they're literally in the same room, right? So, for example, let's say that after recording today, I go home, go to sleep, wake up the next morning, come back to town, go to the grocery store, and buy something. After recording, though, Rob goes to the grocery store because he's hungry and buys something. I meet Rob at the grocery store, even though I've already gone home, slept, come back and it's the next day for me.
Right.
You know, only 2 hours have passed for Rob, whereas almost 24 hours have passed for me. That is what was going on there. So the characters in, so like Grinchak and Rilara and all those guys. Was it Grinchak or was that the captain?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was. All of those guys are not from an alternate dimension. It wasn't a weird timeline or anything like that. Those guys were sent out probably by Belbina to help these guys out. And because of the weird time fluctuations, they ended up at that place at that time. You know, Torque probably switched ships at some point, or these guys boarded his ship. And, you know, they just kind of went on this side quest momentarily. The confusing part is then how Randus plays into it. But since Randus was operating this device that basically controls time and allows him to move through space on top of it, like, ignore how Randus moves, because Randus can basically go either wherever he wants or wherever he can manage with the chronometer. So think about it as basically, you know, Torque and I think Seven Owls probably was that, like, get off the thing, they get on a different boat, they go over there, they meet up with these other guys, while simultaneously other people's timelines are, like, adjusting around it.
So
so Torque is the only one that actually knows what happened.
Torque totally remembers Randus popping in, having some fights, taking the chronometer, and disappearing again.
Yes.
And remembering those
Torque met Rilara. Torque met Grinchak. Torque fought a giant brass monster, probably like a robot guy, and some spinning tops in a quartz temple.
On conveyor belts.
Yeah,
and on conveyor belts. And the thing is, as we have learned in recent episodes, if you ask Torque about that, he will tell you, but God help you trying to figure it out.
And then Trell will like hold her head. Really
or what was the bullet? See,
Graham wants to know if we could ever go to Canadian con.
To a Canadian con,
like the Toronto Comic Con or Fan Expo. Hmm. To be honest, I don't have a lot of time to be, you know, to go to a lot of conventions. I get to maybe one or two a year, and we generally right now would not set up a table at those events, so it'd just be us wandering around or covering things now, for our website. I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but
here's the thing is, and some people are actually not aware of this, Critical Hit is part of Major Spoilers, and Major Spoilers is a news and entertainment website largely revolving around comics, but also a lot of pop culture. So sometimes we do end up at cons, but we're actually there as reporters.
Right.
So we don't necessarily have a table at these areas.
And unless we're invited and expenses are paid.
Yeah,
which never happened.
We have not reached our funding goal.
Travel issues.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I would love to be able to go to like Con Bravo in Ontario. That'd be neat.
I mean, we're certainly not opposed to the idea.
Does Air Canada require that I get two seats?
Oh, yeah. Also, we probably had to get passports.
I don't have to get passports.
Well, you should.
Yes.
But I actually don't know that you need to go to Canada.
You don't need it to go to Canada.
Right.
You need it to come back.
Right.
Damn it.
I was so close
to getting Rob and Brian trapped in Canada.
Too bad. We already have friends in Canada.
Yeah.
It's actually easy to get back in. I mean, it's a pain in the butt.
Right.
But you can get back in within 24 hours.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Not with my skin color.
Oh, honey.
Let's not go into that. I have gotten stopped. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Let's see. This is from...
Somebody asked me why I was trialing shoplift hams.
Matt.
I'm like, I'm just a fat man.
Matt says, got a lot of stuff here, but I'll get to the main points. I do have to compliment Adriana on really ramping up role-playing last season and the current season. Trell and Orm have had some good moments together and separate that have been absolutely great. Yeah, we're still in Lords of the Feywild chapter, so. Here's my question for you all. I read a lot of discussions on how to make a D&D game better. I subscribe to a lot of newsletters. And almost every source I go to has one thing in common. Do not use a DM PC. The definition I've found for a DMPC varies, but it seems to be any NPC that is with the party for an extended time and has their own motivations, goals, and role-playing moments. After discussing this concept with my players, we realized that every game any of us have ever run has been chock full of DMPCs. Not only that, but they played extremely important roles in some of our favorite moments. So my question is simply, what do you think about the dreaded DMPC? Is my definition off? Have you seen it used to poor effect in games, or perhaps to good effect? Was Camus a DMPC, if only temporarily? Thanks, Matt. Ormantrell are the best.
I would say Camus fits the definition.
Both Camus and Queen's Rebellious Daughters were DMPCs.
Phony as well. And
I'd say they're more NPCs just because they weren't that permanent of a recurring.
When you say DMPC to me, I feel like it's a character that the DM is playing with a sheet as though he were a member of the party. And having that character's interests in mind, whereas Val Belbina had specific goals, Thony had a specific, thing about him. All of the NPC characters that we have interacted with have been very well-rounded, but their story arcs aren't about joining the party and being a part of it all and, getting rich or whatever the hell our motivation is. I think that when they're talking about, when they say a DMPC is a bad thing, first of all, tropes are not bad. It is a thing. It is a tool. I can use the same hammer to build a house that I can use to crack Rob over the head. That doesn't necessarily mean that, it's something that you should never use because I can crack Rob over the head with it.
Only if you do it in that order, because his head's really hard and it might break your hammer.
This is true. And that's, that's important. But I think that the DMPC is a higher level tool in many cases. And I think that it's a tool that not everybody knows how to use well.
Well, yeah, especially if the DMPC is the one that's forcing the people to go in a direction.
If you think about a movie like, for example, Star Wars or something like that.
Right.
If the DMPC is Luke Skywalker, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah.
If the DMPC is Obi-Wan Kenobi, you might be doing something right. Because... Right. The point of Obi-Wan is to get everybody in the Millennium Falcon, right? Mm-hmm. And he's there with them, and he goes, and they go to the Death Star, and he's like, spoilers. but then he's gone. Then he's out of there.
What do you mean that's no moon?
Yeah, exactly.
And if the DMPC is Chewbacca...
I
can see an argument either way for that.
Yeah.
Let's see.
So what do you guys think? You guys have some thoughts there, Brian?
For the most part, the NPCs, like other than Rodrigo's use, if we count Camus, has been problematic in every game I've ran, especially like the very first game I was ever really a part of, where there was only two of us players, and so he played a character to flesh out.
Right.
And, we were, sitting here, looking at this door, trying to decide how to get it, because there's, room to shut or whatever, and he's just like, okay, guys, we should go this way, and it's that's horrible. That's you're telling us what to do because you wrote the adventure a certain way, and
to extend the Star Wars metaphor, the lure of the dark side is strong. Once you have a PC in the party as a game master, it's really easy to overuse it and to just basically lead the party by the nose.
Is that right?
Did you say why is that, Steven? Because it's really easy to get caught up with your own character.
Yes.
Get all caught up with your
own motivations. Isn't that what the joy of the monsters is all about?
It's a different deal. Mm.
It's different when you actually have...
You say that every role-playing character is the hero of their own story. Mm-hmm. If you are writing the story and you're the hero, sometimes it's completely unintentional. You occasionally write things in your own favor. That's why they call them Mary Sues. Mm-hmm. Self-insert characters are problematic by definition, but they're not necessarily always bad.
Yeah. However, despite the fact that all the, we've said that mostly a negative thing, I've been in a situation much like Brian's where we needed an extra character in there just to actually have a party, just to have a capable group.
Right, so that the monsters wouldn't just roll you.
Basically the monsters wouldn't just roll us, and it's actually worked relatively well. You just make the DMPC's motivations almost strictly tied into
one of the normal PCs. You make the DM PC a 100% of the time, an NPC that is there 100% of the time.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's lots of, and if it's for combat purposes, there's lots of way to do that. You can give them, like, if you absolutely need to have another, basically, body on the battle mat so that the party doesn't get
killed.
Could
just be under the control of another player.
You can give them a pet. You can give them a robot. You can. Yeah. There's lots of things. You can give them some kind of spirit servant that, you know, their father was like, I am a demon guy and I'm your dad, so you're getting a spirit servant to look after you. It's like, Dad, I don't want one. I want to be my own devil guy. Like, there you go. There's a story.
But Alex is actually running one where he's having to play a character in the game because he's only got two players, and his character is a subordinate to one of the other two players.
Right.
All right. Well, my battery is now dead on my laptop.
That also means
no more emails until another 4 to 8 episodes from now.
Oh, Jesus.
So write a letter real quick.
I know we made it all the way through to July, so...
Oh, that's pretty good.
I figure by November we'll hit... we'll get the August. July questions answered and just move on from there. My hope is that one day we will be completely caught up. But
no way. No possible way.
I know, because you know why? Because people keep sending us these great emails to podcast@majorspoilers.com. People are using the comment section over at majorspoilers.com for each of these episodes to share their thoughts and their reactions. And sometimes on some episodes, it is so great to read all the comments, both from people that like what happened and people that don't like what happened. Mm-hmm. Everyone, though, is very polite.
Yeah.
You know, people, it's Major Spoilers is not a site like some other sites where it just devolves into trolling and
flame wars
and all that stuff. Everyone's, and we try to moderate it enough to where if people do start becoming complete jackwagons, that we pull them aside and tell them to knock it off. So just go over there and share your comments and your thoughts and your ideas on stuff. But questions that you want to answer during the show, podcast@majorspoilers.com. Of course, we've mentioned the members-only site, the VIP site, members.majorspoilers.com. You guys, the people that are VIPs, and you who are just spreading the word and telling other people about this, are what ensure that this show and all of our other shows, and if you haven't listened to our other shows, go check them out. This is what keeps the show going. You know, it's not, I mean... We could say it's the love that you send our way, but love don't pay the electric bill, and love don't pay the internet bill, and love don't pay the server bills.
It don't, indeed.
But we certainly enjoy a critical hit, and we do try to plan to continue this for years to come. Anything else?
Amazon link.
Oh, Amazon link. Yep, if you're going to go buy some stuff. If you're wanting to buy 4E stuff, if you're wanting to go and buy some Pathfinder miniatures since you can't find D&D miniatures, if you're wanting to go buy The Legend of Drizzt, either in book form or audiobook form or Kindle form or maybe even game form, that Drizzt is all over the place, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a reason they made a board game from them.
You can go do that at majorspoilers.com. Click on that Amazon.com link. Same price. You're not paying anything different. A little bit comes back our way. And again, that also, there's a lot of ways you can help. Go t-shirts. Out and, yeah, t-shirts/loot.com. Man, this turned into a giant commercial here at the end. /loot.com if you want to buy some Critical Hit t-shirts. We will hopefully maybe by the time you listen to this, have some new shirts for you to buy just in time for the holiday season, nice. Which is just around the corner. And I know that there are a lot of Critical Hit fans on your list of buying for stuffs. Right? Isn't that what the holiday's called? Buying for stuffs?
Buy for stuffs.
Yes. So you want to head over to /loot.
Oh, buy for stuffs. Oh, buy for stuffs. How lovely are thy prices?
At /loot, they're very good. A t-shirt with an Orym hood.
Stop it now.
More singing.
No more singing. And no more wire hangers.
So really, thank you guys for everything that you do. We really enjoy, again, doing this show for you, and thank you for the kind words. And for all our military people out there who listen to this show and who are not always able to write in because you're deep beneath the ocean or you're cut off or the things that you say get censored by your supervisors, thanks for listening and keep doing what you guys do because you guys are awesome. And send us some pictures. Send us some pictures of you guys. I know some of you guys in the past have sent us stuff from your bunks with all of your Dungeons and Dragons stuff. Mm-hmm. Send us some pics of what you guys are doing. That'd be really cool to see where you're stationed. Providing that it's okay to do that.
Right, right,
you know,
right.
Don't like, violate it.
Here's me with my D&D books at a cover ups.
Well, you know,
thanks, Critical Hit.
Well, you know, the group that sent us the Bin Laden stuff was just, you know.
Yeah, that's it's a little bit much.
It's Critical Hit sticker on there.
Oh, no.
Helmets.
That's awful.
That'd be great. Okay, thanks everybody for listening. Until next time, here's hoping all of your dice rolls are critical hits.
No critical hits.
Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.